Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So now, the last four teams standing for the Lombardi Trophy. On the NFC side, it's Washington and Philadelphia. They were 1-1 during the regular season. First met on November 14th, so it's the third meeting in 2.5 months. And Buffalo and Kansas City, we were here to see that one back November 17th when Josh had that epic 4th-and-2 run from 27 yards out to seal the game.
I don't know how many of you were watching that last night. That was Jim Nantz at the end of the Ravens-Bills playoff game promoting the upcoming championship games. It was surreal watching that. It happened on NBC, too, towards the end of the Rams and Eagles matchup. But there was just something when I saw that full-screen graphic pop up that I was just like, wow. This thing is real. Good morning. It is real. Washington is playing at Philadelphia Sunday at 3 p.m. for the right to go to Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans. That graphic was beautiful, too. It was just lots of color, and it was, you know, the NFC Championship game and the AFC Championship game on top of each other on the left side, leading into a big graphic on the right side that said Super Bowl 59. You know, the NFC Championship little graphic had Washington in burgundy and gold, Philadelphia in green. There was a 6 for the seed next to Washington, a 2 for the seed next to Philadelphia. 3 p.m. on Fox, presented by Intuit TurboTax. I think I've said this many times over the years, that, and it's not that I don't want them to win and win the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is the ultimate in a Lombardi trophy. But I think I've said no less than 24 times over the years just how nice it would be if Washington once again could play on this upcoming Sunday. You know, 3 o'clock or 6:30, those have been the affixed times for AFC NFC championship games for years. They swap them, you know, each year one gets the primetime spot, one gets the afternoon spot. This is the year for Fox to have the afternoon spot. In part because I think Sunday, the championship Sunday, is the last true football Sunday of the season. You know, you have more than one game. You know, it's a doubleheader. The Super Bowl's always different. It's a bit anticlimactic. You have to wait 2 weeks. It's more about the party, the celebration, the halftime, the commercials, etc. But being a part of this upcoming Sunday is, it's special. And seeing those graphics, it popped up at the end of the Philadelphia game with Tirico as well. But once the final four were set, the final two in the NFC, the final two in the AFC were set. It was just, even my wife, who was watching the end of the Buffalo-Baltimore game with me when that popped up, she goes, oh my God, they're playing in the championship game. And then I had to remind her that that meant that it wasn't the Super Bowl, that there was still one game left after that one. But it's happening. And man, was Saturday night awesome. What a performance. And here's the other thing real quickly, because we'll have plenty of time this week to talk about the matchup with Philadelphia. Remember, as it was becoming clearer that Washington and Philadelphia were the two best teams in the NFC East, and that there was even a possibility that they would play each other in a playoff game. It was more or less a 7-2 game, you know, a wild card weekend game with Washington being the 7, Philly being a 2. And I said, you know, one of the best parts about being relevant again and being a competitive team, being a contender, is that these rivalries that so many of us remember when they were actually legit rivalries, that we weren't the afterthought among the four NFC East teams, that they are the best. And this one, Philly-Washington, because of the way the division's shaping up, and you don't know really one year to the next, but there's a chance you're going to play three times this year and then be the two favorites next year, and there would be two titanic matchups next year. You know one of them will end up being in prime time. You know, the other one might be on Christmas Day or, you know, maybe Thanksgiving night. Who knows? But that it has a chance to resurrect something for us. You know, Dallas was obviously the all-time rival for Washington fans, but Dallas doesn't care about Washington anymore. It hasn't for 20 years, you know, 25 years. Philadelphia is the bigger game for them. The Giants couldn't care less about us, but now maybe we can get Philly to care a little bit, and I care. This would be this is a byproduct. It's ancillary to the big part of this, which is you're a game away from the Super Bowl. Who cares who we're playing? By the way, during the game yesterday, I decided that I thought the Rams would be the tougher matchup. I was, in watching that game, even as the weather deteriorated in Philadelphia, Philly's got an issue offensively, and if Jalen Hurts isn't 100%, this is more than winnable. This is, I mean, dare I say it, this would be disappointing if they don't win. But more on that coming up this week. What an absolute couple of weeks this has been. And Saturday night was incredible. It was quite the performance. And once again, we got Jaden Daniels on full tilt, full display. He was the best player in the game. He is the number one reason we are here. They were unstoppable on offense on Saturday night in Detroit. They were opportunistic on defense. I'm going to have a game take for you coming up in the next segment. What I liked, didn't like, etc. The good, bad, and more. It was very clear with the way they walked into that stadium and the way they walked out to play that game. They knew they had a chance to win the game. They were not fooling around either. They went after it in an aggressive way. They played to win. They coached to win. And they won the game. I mean, 45-31 over the top-seeded Detroit Lions in their building. That game for a while in the second quarter was one hell of a football game. Neither defense able to stop the other. Both offenses prolific. But only one of the two teams, only one of the two had Jaden Daniels. Our team did. And what we have seen and what we have witnessed over this season, now 19 games old, is simply put the greatest season for a rookie football player in the history of the league. Forget about the position. For any football player at any position in league history. And I don't think there's any doubt that he is right now an elite, high-level, top three, top five quarterback. And yeah, you could make the case that there isn't anybody that you'd rather have than number five right now. And when you have that position, you know, nailed down with greatness, you got a shot to accomplish anything. It's funny because after the game, I was typically, I think, with this franchise, for all of us that have been lifelong fans of the team, and look, it's gotten complicated in recent years. We all understand that for a lot of different reasons. But I think that in most cases, I would have been very emotional, you know, with joy, with ecstasy, with pride, with whatever word comes to mind, you know, nostalgic. It would have been, there would have been so much emotion wrapped up into it. But what really carried the evening for me was I couldn't get away from how good he was. The greatness of our quarterback, not just for the season, but in that game. Going into that environment and having a dominant performance. Again, I think that there is and was a feeling of satisfaction. We know what we've been through over the last three decades, really the last two in particular. The last 25 years, we have been treated and mistreated and abused in a way that no fan base has been by its owner. And we never thought we would ever get out of it. We became, as I mentioned, you know, and I've mentioned several times, as Red would say about, you know, Brooks Hadlin in Shawshank Redemption, we became institutionalized in many ways. We just expected the worst, and we got used to it, and we got comfortable with it almost. It is shocking where they are right now, considering where we were even talking about this team 2 months ago. But it's much better this way. It is so good to see them featured prominently on this stage that they will be featured on. And I think I mentioned this last week. You can sense, I hope you guys have picked up on this, how many people that aren't Washington fans but are NFL fans are thrilled about Washington being back. Now, for some of those people, that is, you know, an age, there's an age differential on that. You know, if you're 40 or older and you remember when Washington was one of the prominent franchises in the league and in sports, you're like, wow, you know, finally, they're back. This is kind of cool. And you know who they feel great for is us. You know, we're not looking for it necessarily, but I can remember, and I've talked about this before, the Packers, after their 60s, you know, all-time Lombardi run, they weren't good for like 25 years, and then Brett Favre showed up, and all of a sudden, they were competing for Super Bowls, and everybody around the league of a certain age, and I was not of a certain age then, because I did not remember, wasn't around for the Lombardi Packers teams of the 60s, but people loved it that Green Bay was relevant again. People love it that Washington's relevant again. But for me, Saturday night was, I just couldn't get over watching that game and thinking about it afterwards, how great he is, how great he was in that particular game. It is true right now. There is no debating it anymore. He's one of the best two or three quarterbacks, you know, if you want to push it to four or five, in the NFL. I can tell you this right now. I wouldn't trade him for anybody. I think when people say, well, come on, you know, Mahomes, he deserves that label as the best in the game. He does. He's earned it, and Jaden hasn't gotten to where he's gotten, which is the Super Bowl and won it. And for that particular position, even though it is so dependent, you need to get to that spot. You need to win one. You need to at least get to one. But for those that would say, well, of course you would take Mahomes, or of course you would take Jackson or Burrow, or no, there's no of course in this conversation. There's no of course. Name one thing that this guy doesn't do at a super high level. I said that maybe 3 weeks ago, and somebody said he still doesn't protect himself well. And I thought, okay, but he's not terrible at protecting himself. He actually is pretty nifty and pretty clever at getting down in traffic and protecting himself. He does that little sidestep to jump out of bounds before taking a hit. But some of the plays they run for him, it's almost impossible for him not to take on tacklers and not to get tackled in the field of play. But there isn't anything else that you can name that he doesn't do at a very high level. The performance that he had in the first half of that game Saturday night, the performance of just the two playoff games in total, but in the second half, they didn't need him as much, you know, to throw it or to run it. They actually really started to churn it out on the ground. And let me just preface about Saturday night, because Denton and I talked about this all last week leading up to the game. Detroit is really, really struggling defensively. The 16, 17, 18, whatever the number is, I've seen it dramatically, you know, sort of hyperbolically described as like basically two different teams that of defensive players that have hit the injured reserve. But they have really, really suffered from what typically is a major differentiator between teams over the course of 17 games, and that is the realization of you don't have the players you started the season with. They were a really good defensive team to start the season with. They didn't have that team on the field on Saturday night. And then they lost to a broken arm, one of their key defensive players that were left over. I know Detroit's defense isn't good, you know, but still, I mean, on the road, in that environment, he went in there and just took the GD game over. He threw for 242 in the first half. They scored 31 points in the first half, 28 in the second quarter. They didn't punt in the first half. He accounted for, in total, 271 yards in 30 minutes. I mean, and did he ever look like he was even sweating? The crowd noise didn't affect him. They were really buttoned up offensively, man. Give Cliff, give Dan Quinn a lot of credit. They were totally prepared for the crowd noise. And I'm sure most of you, if you weren't at the game, have already talked to somebody who was at the game. I had at least a half dozen people say that's the loudest environment they've ever been in, Detroit, early in that game. Here's a guy that ultimately accounted for 350 yards of total offense in a divisional round playoff game on the road against the one seed, all the while doing it without turning the ball over. He doesn't turn the ball over. Now, against the team they play Sunday, he has turned the ball over, and we'll talk about that, certainly. No sacks in the game. The offense, I'm sorry, Tress, we need you one time tonight. We're going to need you to punt once tonight. Is that okay? He's punted once in two playoff games. He sat back against that contained rush that Detroit had when they didn't blitz and just picked the Lions apart. When they came after him, 12 of 16 for 191 yards and a touchdown and a QBR of 97. When they came after him too quickly and the pressure was too aggressive, he just slipped him, ducked him, and just kind of, you know, created and ran. No one's going to tackle him. And when the biggest games, when the biggest plays, excuse me, of the game needed delivery from the quarterback, he did, per usual. 2-for-2 passing on fourth downs for 19 yards, both completions for conversions. And then he ran for 3 yards on a naked bootleg on a fourth down conversion. What in God's name have we been watching all year? I know that I pushed hard for this. I never thought. No one could have ever predicted this. You know, those people that said he should have been taken number one overall, and I thought that there was a case to be made for him taking one overall. Nobody saw this coming. I mean, what ups and downs did he even have? Okay, the first Philly game on the road, I mean, that was a four-night turnaround after an absolute epic against the Steelers, with the Eagles basically coming in off a bye week after they pounded the Cowboys. That was a tough spot, not to mention against a very good coordinator and a very good defense. Other than that, first half maybe against the Cowboys, you know, on November 24th, first half a bit against the Cowboys 2 weeks ago, he didn't have anything resembling a rookie season. He's an elite. We've been saying it for months now, certainly a month and a half, but now I think everybody sees it. He's the best quarterback in the NFL. You can say that without being mocked. He's certainly the best quarterback in the NFC. Incredible. The fourth rookie quarterback to win multiple playoff games. He will be the sixth quarterback to play in a championship game, and he has a chance to be the first ever quarterback to play in a Super Bowl. It is absolutely amazing how one player has elevated an entire team. You know, Washington has some good players. I am not going to deny that. They do. And plenty of them contributed to the win on Saturday night. I mean, how about the game Mikey Sanders still had? He's got everything, though, that a great quarterback has. I mean, there's no physical limitation anywhere. He can throw it with the best of them. The release, the processing, the compactness of the throw, the accuracy. He throws with touch. He throws with zip. He throws the deep ball. He throws the check down. He throws the quick screen. His release is so quick. I don't want to call it Marino-like. It's not Marino-like, but it is amazing. Just that flick of the wrist. His mobility is already all-time great. I'm not saying it's better than Vic or better than Lamar, but he's right there. And then the mental part of it, I mean, he processes so quickly. I give Kingsbury, and I think, you know, there's going to be something done about Kingsbury when this season is over to talk about how he made this possible for Jaden, because not every situation that Jaden could have gone into would have resulted in this. You know, the coordinator and the plan is a big part of it, and the coaching is a big part of it. Of course, the coaching doesn't matter at all if the player doesn't have the physical ability and the mental ability. And if he doesn't have what Jaden has, which is completely, completely unaffected by pressure. Physical pressure, mental pressure, it doesn't matter. He's unaffected by it. The poise that we've seen going back to even the opener, certainly week two against the Giants, 100% for the first time in terms of big-time plays against the Bengals in week three. The poise that people, you know, it's now basically almost his hallmark, you know, description. How about the poise on Jaden Daniels? Yeah, but how about the arm on Daniels? How about the legs on Jaden Daniels? How about the leadership ability? How about just everything he does? I can't, as I said, I can't sit here and think of anything that he doesn't do at an extremely high level for the position. You know, it's like, where is the where's that rookie game that we all just looked at each other and said, oh my God, man, he really looked like a rookie. Okay, maybe the Philly game on Thursday night in November. Maybe. He doesn't mess up. He's really, really special. And is there anybody out there that doesn't think that he won't be special Sunday in Philadelphia? Saturday night was awesome. I was very much kind of in favor, as you know, and Denton as well, in seeing a track meet. That wasn't hard to predict, but sometimes you don't know in the NFL. That back and forth in the second quarter, I thought we were destined to be, you know, witnessing a classic NFL playoff game, you know, something that might even go beyond. Like when it got to, you know, when it was 24-21, 31-21, I'm like, Detroit's going to score here at the end of the half. It's going to be 31-28 or it's going to be 31-24. Already probably one of the highest scoring first halves in playoff history. And we're going to see something like 54-51 in overtime. I mean, it seemed destined to be that. And look, let's not, you know, try to kid ourselves and say it was all about what Jaden did and about what this team did. Detroit soiled themselves in this football game. Completely soiled themselves. They made a mess of Saturday night. They turned the ball over five times. They had 12 men on the field on a fourth down. For some unknown reason, they took number 26 out of the game and gave the ball to David Montgomery seven times. Jahmyr Gibbs was easily the second best player in the game on Saturday night, and he only carried the ball 14 times. Are you kidding me? The dude averaged over 10 yards a carry in the first half. I mean, at one point, I'm like, if they just hand it to him or throw it to him, they will not be stopped. And they took him out of the game. He didn't start the game. David Montgomery did. He didn't start the second half. David Montgomery did. What were they thinking? I truly think one of the real benefits, one of the real sort of side stories here, and we didn't know it last week, is that David Montgomery was healthy enough to play in the game. Thank God. Washington played a totally 100% clean game. Detroit made a mess of the game. A lot of that was Washington forced, don't get me wrong. Three of those five turnovers are Washington forced turnovers. But wow, you can't win unless you've got Jaden Daniels on your team committing five turnovers. That's what he committed. He didn't, but the team did against Philadelphia when they beat him 36-33 on December 22nd. All right. Yeah, It is a position we're not familiar with, but it really kind of, when I sat there last night and there's Jim Nantz and he's putting up that full screen Chiron, I'm like, I've been thinking about this for decades now. Like, this Final Four, there's just something a bit special. The Super Bowl will be great. And trust me, they can win this game Sunday. There is no doubt they can win this game Sunday to go to the Super Bowl. And then, by the way, whomever they play in it, they can win that game too. This has a chance to be the all-time turnaround story in sports. 4-13 to potentially a championship. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's take it one game at a time. And let's take at least the first part of today, if not a little bit longer, to look back on the first divisional round playoff win for them since they beat Atlanta back in 1991 and their first appearance in an NFC championship game since 1991. This will be the fifth time that we will see a matchup between NFC East teams in the NFC championship game. Washington has been a part of four of those. All right, my game take when we come back.
Third and 10. Four-man rush. It's Goff throwing over the middle, and it's picked off Jeremy Chinn. And Washington will be going to the NFC Championship for the first time in 33 years.
Did you predict that Jeremy Chinn would have a late-game pick?
I did. I should have bet my mortgage on it.
What did you say?
I think my direct quote was that Jeremy Chinn is going to make a big play late in the game, a turnover of some kind, either a fumble or a pick.
All right. Well, that's good. I almost had the halftime score with my imaginary game that I did last week. I said 28-24 at halftime. Of course, I said that Detroit, I think, would have the lead 28-24. But at one point when it was 24-21, I texted you and I said, if this ends up 28-24 at halftime and I didn't bet, you know, first half over, I'm the biggest moron of all time, because I did not bet that. I didn't wager anything on the game Saturday night. Didn't have anything on the game Saturday night. Real quickly, my buddy Jake just said, what were the other NFC championship games? Well, 72 was the first ever NFC East matchup in the NFC title game. It was Washington and Dallas. In 1980, Philly beat Dallas. In 82, Washington beat Dallas. In 86, the Giants beat Washington. So now we've got Washington at Philly. So the only NFC East team to play all three of the other NFC East teams in a championship game is now Washington. Dallas played Philly and Washington twice. The Giants only had an NFC East matchup with Washington, and Philly only had an NFC East matchup with Dallas before now Washington. The point spread, if you haven't seen it yet, Washington is a 5.5-point favorite. The total is 48. You can find some fives out there. I saw a 4.5 at one point yesterday, but I see mostly fives and five and a halves. The key all week long will be Jalen Hurts. Because no matter what you think of Jalen Hurts, and they have struggled to throw the football, when he's in the game, they are 11-on-11 in the run game. And that is what's crucial for them against us. And if he's not able to be a legitimate run threat in Sunday's NFC title game, massive advantage, Washington. All right, let's get to my game take, what I liked, what I didn't like, lots of other things to mention. All right, so, you know, first of all, this was a game, like we talked about all last week, that was pretty easy to sort of pregame. Two really good offenses, not really good, two high level, two of the best four or five offenses in the NFL, going head-to-head with two defenses that clearly have struggled this year. Detroit's more so in the back half of the season because of their injuries. And this was going to be a game just like the Tampa game. Can you play a little bit better on offense than Detroit does, but can you play the clean game and have them make a few mistakes? Tampa had the crucial turnover in their own inside their own 15-yard line, had that crucial penalty on third and inches, and they lost by three in a game in which Washington scored on five of their seven drives and Tampa scored on four of their seven. In this game, Washington was dominant offensively. They were better offensively, although not, you know, yards per play in the first half was actually scary what Detroit had put together in that first half. But the obvious here was Jaden Daniels is the best player on the field. He's also a quarterback. And Detroit turned the ball over five times. Ball game. Now, what's kind of interesting is when you consider, because I thought plus one in the red zone, plus one in the turnover margin, they win. They would not have won the game more likely than not with just plus one and plus one. Not that they needed all five. They didn't need all five turnovers. And they didn't need, you know, they were plus one in the red zone. Detroit was 3-for-6, Washington 4-for-4. But there's no doubt that had they turned the ball over, say, just two times, it would have been more likely than not a different story. But that's the playoffs, man. That's NFL football. The team that doesn't make mistakes usually wins against a team that does make the mistakes. And look, in Washington's case, those mistakes, three of them at least, were forced. All right, number one on the list of things that I liked. Look, the offense just in general. There have been a few moments this year, I mean, very few. The Philadelphia game on that Thursday night game. You know, I don't even count the Tampa game, honestly. The Dallas first half in November, the Dallas first half in January. Other than that, this team's offense has been at times unstoppable. Worst case for the opposing team is that they're just very effective in moving the football. This is going to go down as, I think, the most difficult to defend offensive football team in franchise history. The 83 team was outrageously good on offense. The 91 team, no team threw the deep ball better than they did. But in terms of how versatile and how many ways this offense can slice and dice a defense, I think we're going to look back on this and say, offensively, this team was the most difficult in franchise history to defend, maybe until next year's team or the year after, because what they could add to this could make them scary. But we're in the moment right now. Offensively, in this football game, they were dominant. You know, they scored on six of their nine drives. On the other three, they moved the ball on two of them. They had a fourth down stop when they took the ball out of the quarterback's hands and put it into Marcus Mariota's hands, and they missed a field goal. It was a meaningless field goal. It wasn't meaningless necessarily, but they were up 14 with 2.5 minutes to go. And then they did get stopped on that first drive of the second half. Oh, my God. Tress, I don't know. Were you napping? Were you reading a book? We actually need you to do something other than to hold for extra points. 481 yards of total offense, 27 first downs. They were just 4 of 12 on third down, but they were 3-for-4 on fourth, and really 4-for-5 on fourth down if you count the 12 men on the field penalty. By the way, on the drives, they were 6 out of 9. I don't count kneel downs, nor should you. They knelt the ball down at the end of the first half. They knelt the ball down at the end of the game. They averaged 6.6 yards per play, 9.6 yards per pass. They ran the ball. They were very versatile. They had a running game on Saturday night with their running backs. They rushed for 182 yards, passed for 299. And clearly that passing number could have been a lot higher and would have been a lot higher had Washington not extended the lead and Detroit get, you know, they were up 17. You know, when they went up 17 with, you know, what was it, 8 minutes to go in the game, it was not necessary, and they didn't throw it as much in the second half as they did in the first half. That first half, though, still, you know, 312 yards of 31 points, okay, 312 yards of offense, and Jaden was 14 to 21 for 242 and two touchdowns, eight carries, 29 yards. B-Rob was averaging 7 yards a carry. Diami had nearly 100 yards of pass reception yardage in the first half. Terry had 75 yards of pass reception yardage in the first half. It was a show, man. They are a show. I mean, this isn't like the greatest show on turf necessarily, but what you saw Saturday night was about as good as it gets offensively in the NFL. So offensively, overall, that leads the list. But then you get to just Jaden and his performance. I mean, I won't bury the lead here. It was an A-plus performance. You know, he ultimately was 22 of 31 for 299, 350 total yards because he ran for 51. No turnovers, no sacks. As mentioned, 12 for 16 for 191 yards versus the blitz. That is insane productivity. Washington, he was 96.6 in his QBR versus unblocked rushers this season, and he had a couple of others on Saturday night. 3 for 3 on fourth downs with him in the game, right? 2 for 2 throwing the football, 1 for 1 running the football. The only fourth down they got stopped, he was in the game, but obviously that was a botched play with Mariota under center. I just thought from the jump he was incredibly sharp. You know, the quick game was working. They went quick to Ertz. They went quick to Terry to start the game. He had a check down to Eckler for big yardage. The second drive of the game, there was a 3rd and 10 to Crowder on a comeback curl kind of a route. I mean, on time, the ball's out before he's even into that curl. There's a 3rd and 10 to Diami versus the blitz before the field goal, and Diami dropped it. I had somebody say, "You're unfair to Diami. A guy got a hand in it." No, that's a catchable ball. Diami had the throw on the 3rd down before the field goal that made it 7-3 Detroit. Zane Gonzalez drilled it from 47 yards. That's right in Diami's hands. You got to squeeze it, pull it, and he allowed it to hang out there and get knocked out. No, that's a drop. 3rd drive, big one for Diami Brown of 42 yards. That's not the best one to Diami. The 4th and 3 to Ertz for 7 yards. The 4th drive, he hits the RPO bubble to Terry, and Terry takes it 58 yards for a touchdown. That's such good recognition. I thought Brady was outstanding on the game. I've heard, you know, we've talked about this. I just didn't watch him early in the season. I would imagine that those of you that thought he was terrible early in the year think he's much improved now. But he talked about it. He said, this is straight RPO. This is if they identify Branch as a blitzer, the ball's getting out to Terry because they have the numbers advantage. If Branch isn't coming, he hands it off. Well, he identified it, threw it to Terry. They had the advantages. Excellent blocking, touchdown. The bomb on their 5th drive in the first half to Diami Brown, could you drop it into somebody's hands on a deep ball any better than that? And what a catch by Diami, who had Kirby Joseph basically covering up his eyes in his face mask with his hands. Still Jaden. He had Branch as a free runner on a 2nd and 8 on the 2nd drive in the second half. And it's just what we've seen him do all year. Like, you can't, I don't know how you rush him without it being multiple players being able to kind of hem him in. When he's gotten sacked, it's been waiting a bit too long to try to make a play, thinking that he can make a play, because that's what he does think, and he usually is successful. But if you've just got one dude that comes as a free runner, he's not going to get sacked by that guy. You know, even if his back is turned, he just feels it too well. He scrambled for 12 yards on that play. The 4th and 2 naked bootleg, when he lined up under center, how many times, we as fans, Denton, sometimes I feel like we're the ones that teams should be thinking about in terms of tendency breaking, because we watch every play and we know every context of every play. We're not just watching film. Every time he's under center in 3rd or 4th and short, it is a fake handoff, naked bootleg coming back the other way. And if it's not naked, there's a quick chip by the tight end and then he's trying to get out. It's impossible to stop. 4th quarter up 38-28. How about the throw to Terry on 4th and 2 versus the pressure? I thought he made, you know, excellent decisions all night long, throwing it and running it. You know, in the read option game, I was a bit critical of some of the decisions I thought he made against Tampa. I thought it left a lot of rushing yards on the field against Tampa. I thought he pulled it when he should have given it, and I thought he gave it when he should have pulled it at least four or five times last week. I didn't see many that he made a mistake on Saturday night. Keep in mind, and we should emphasize this, Detroit defensively up front, completely different than Tampa up front. Tampa is a difficult team up front to run against. They had been all year. Detroit was essentially, you know, a sieve, really. There were holes and cracks everywhere. But I thought the read option, even the read option that blended into the RPOs, you know, Brady referred to them as triple options. I personally view a triple option as when you've got a pitch man, like they ran against Tampa. You know, he faked the handoff and he came down the line with Eckler as a pitch guy. He didn't pitch it in that game. I always view that as more triple option. The blended read option RPO is a part of their offense too. And that's where he's got the option of handing it, not handing it, keeping it, running it, or not handing it off, keeping it, and throwing it. And I thought a lot of the decisions he made were great. There were two misses that I counted. He missed Bates on an RPO on a first and goal in the first half, and he missed Terry up 38-28 when he threw behind him. But the next play versus the pressure, when they went for it on fourth and two, he found Terry. His passer rating for the game was 122.9. His QBR was 91.8. You've seen all the numbers out there. This guy is an absolute freak. He just completed the greatest. We completed the greatest rookie season in the history of the league at quarterback. And I think by the time we get done with this season, we're going to look back on it and say this is the greatest rookie season by a player, period, at any position in the history of the league. It's possible that we will say that. Some are already saying it. Number two on the list, or number three on the things of that I liked list. Look, you can't deny that Detroit aided in their demise on Saturday night. You know, these games, especially this time of year, are often decided by turnover margin. They were minus five. They also had 12 men on the field on a fourth down. They also, for whatever reason, took Jahmyr Gibbs out of the game too much. Now, some of these turnovers, and let's go through them. The Armstrong forced fumble on the sack, great play. I mean, does Goff have to throw the ball forward after getting sacked? I don't know. He didn't protect it very well, but still, excellent play. That's a forced turnover in a game, by the way, that was 7-3 with them threatening to go up two scores early in the game. The Quan Martin pick six, huge. A terrible throw, obviously, by Goff, who was confused at times by some of the coverages. Give Washington some credit. Joe Witt Jr. some credit. They played more zone. They mixed it up. They confused him. But that one, and Brady pointed it out, he's like, what are you doing? Laporta's not only open on the check down, he probably turns it upfield and gets the first down. Luvu should have been penalized on the return. But I also will point out to those that would say, well, Luvu should have been penalized and that touchdown should have been overturned. Well, the interception wouldn't have been overturned. They still would have had possession of the ball, and they probably would have scored anyway, because that's what they did all night. They had six touchdowns, so they probably would have scored anyway. The Sanristil pick at the end of the first half, undercutting the throw to Jameson Williams, outstanding play. What a night Sanristil had. It's late. It's not thrown where you're supposed to throw it, but still, Sanristil, what a player this dude has been all year long. I thought Ben Johnson got way too tricky too much of the night when he didn't have to, and it cost him on the Jameson Williams throw. He obviously, you know, you can't rely on a receiver to make as a passer the right decision. That's covered. It's covered well, and he threw it anyway, and Sanristil picked it off. Great job by Sanristil on that one, not to get fooled on the play, because the play was supposed to go to Jahmyr Gibbs. But you take that one. And then the chin interception, while not really significant to anything at the end of the game in terms of scoring opportunities, it was a fourth down desperation throw. He had to throw it. But still, that was the fifth, and good one by him. Plus five in the turnover category. You're not going to lose very often when you're plus five. Although Washington was -4 with 5 turnovers against Philadelphia on December 22nd and won. But you can do that when you have greatness at quarterback. The 12 men on the field penalty, man, Brady was all over that, screaming for them to call a timeout. That's just devastating. You know, one of the things, you have to say that the pressure that Washington put on Detroit, the game pressure, the score pressure that they put on Detroit, on Goff, that causes a lot of this stuff. You know, when you're down 38-28, well, that was 31-28. That's a 3-point game. Washington's going for it on 4th and 2. Would they have gotten stopped anyway? Probably not. But you can't, you know, give it to them, which they did. And I don't understand for the life of me why Jahmyr Gibbs didn't touch the ball more than he did. He ended up with 6 catches and 14 carries. It should have been 30 in this game. He was unstoppable. Wow. What a player he is. We started talking about Gibbs when we did one of our buy and sell things in the middle of the season. And I said to you, I said, do you think he might be like McCaffrey or Barkley-like? I mean, he looks like it when you watch him. He is one of the top 3 or 4 backs in the game. And they played David Montgomery in that game. That hurt them. There is no doubt that hurt them and helped us. Gibbs was not going to be stopped as a pass catcher or a runner by anybody on Saturday night. Certainly not Washington. He averaged 10.5 yards per carry in the first half. All right. The rest of what I liked, and then we'll get to kind of the bad list. There wasn't much there. And a lot of other stuff that we will get to. And we'll give you guys a chance to weigh in just on everything. I mean, it's incredible. We're playing in the NFC title game at Philly. A lot of you really wanted Philly for like the reasons that Doc would want them. Well, we got to beat the best in division rivalry, the whole thing. I actually think they're a better matchup for us. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Might have been the OG at that.
Yeah.
Of course, started that here. Here's Goff in trouble. Ball is out. It's recovered by the Commanders. Goff gets hit. He lost it. Armstrong's the one that sacked him and punched it out. And Frankie Louvu has it.
You know, that's an outstanding play by Armstrong. And Louvu, by the way, Washington seemingly jumps on every loose fumble. You know, last week, Wagner, the other night, multiple times. What are you doing when you've run the ball? I mean, Gibbs had ripped off a 33-yard run, a 5-yard run. I mean, they had scored in 6 plays on the drive before. And it's 3rd and 1, and they're in the Washington red zone about to go up 2 scores, and they're dropping them back. I mean, I don't – look, play calling is play calling. It's really hard to criticize. And if it works, it works. But they had an issue. Remember, they lost Zeitler, you know, before this game, one of their key offensive linemen, one of their key interior offensive linemen. Denton, at any point during the game were you like, if they just keep giving it or throwing it to Gibbs, they'll score every single time within 5 or 6 plays?
I don't understand why they ever stopped Kevin. He was the best player on the field for them. He's the hot hand. You know who knows that you never stop feeding the ball to the hot hand?
Who?
Basketball guys. Ben Johnson ain't one of them.
Good one. Yeah. 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 Hey, we Oh, Jahmyr, he's got it going tonight. Let's just run down screens for him, or let's get him into ISO and just let him do his thing. Not Ben Johnson, apparently. We're gonna play David Montgomery. We're going to try to drop Jared Goff back a bunch. Look, when they got behind, you have no choice. Although, I think you did have a choice. I still think Gibbs would have been the best option. Really good play by Dorrance Armstrong. No, that was not AAA moving to the defensive side of the ball. All right, so what I liked overall, just the offense, it was just a dominant performance. I mean, the first half, you're just rarely going to see numbers like that, really, by both teams. It was a show. I mean, they combined for 52 points, the two teams did, 31 first downs, 621 yards and a half. They were, you know, Washington was 2 for 2 in the red zone. Detroit was 2 for 3. It was the fumble. And their 3 turnovers, obviously the difference, massive difference in the game. So offensively, Jaden clearly, and just all of the mistakes that Detroit made kind of lead the list of things that I liked. I really thought offensively there were so many performances in addition to Jaden's that I want to point out. I thought Austin Ekeler was awesome. I thought Brian Robinson Jr. was awesome in the game. I'm telling you, I think that the running back yardage, it doesn't make sense. Look, Tampa's front's good. Dallas's defense was good. Their front was good. The lack of running back yards over, you know, 3 or 4 out of the last 5 games or whatever it was, when you are 11-on-11 in the run game with a quarterback who's part of it, those running backs usually feast, you know. It's been happening now for 12 years in this league, right? Going back to 2012 and what Alfred Morris was able to do with a run, you know, a running quarterback. And we've seen Brian Robinson at times feast this year, Ekeler feast this year, Chris Rodriguez as well. He was not active for the game. I saw a lot of you were like really upset that Rodriguez wasn't active. I think if they were being like really honest with us, they would say they never had that much of a concern about Brian Robinson Jr. Not that there's something going on with Chris Rodriguez that we don't know. Okay, I'll just say that. There's a reason that they don't trust him as much as they do the other guys. I think if we're going to look at Jaden this year, I bet you in that zone read game, that's where they would say, you know, more. There are several instances where Brian Robinson Jr. or Ekeler or Jeremy McNichols would have had 8-9 yards had he made the right decision. I thought he was really solid. But they also played a defense that was, you know, full of holes. Brian Robinson Jr., excellent in the game. 15 carries, 77 yards. Ekeler was outstanding. 6 carries, 47 yards. Ekeler is a pass catcher, man. When he's out in space, the first guy sometimes doesn't even touch him. And then he really gets his body contorted in a way in which he never takes a square shot. He took a square shot in the kickoff return. I understand that, you know, when he got knocked out a month and a half ago. But man, was Ekeler outstanding in this game. Where else? I think everybody offensively, Terry, obviously, Terry McLaurin, unbelievable performance again. I mean, every time the ball's in his hands, you feel like there's an opportunity. Well, there's a chance. You know, the speed was on display on that 58-yard bubble screen, which was an RPO. Who else offensively? I thought Ertz was solid. Ertz comes up with some big grabs. The route he ran for the touchdown is such a good route, the way he broke off the defender and created the space. Diami, another solid game. 6 catches, 98 yards. He's really, really become a significant player in this offense. He had the one drop, but still, overall, Diami Brown was outstanding. I'm sure the analytics graders probably knocked him down a peg for the one drop. That's it on offense. Let's get to the defense and then the list of things that I didn't like when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.